This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
Billy Stats here with Fox Sports Knoxville, and I'm here to tell you DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook, but it's America's top-rated sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN when you sign up to turn $1 into $150 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win the next game, and if they do, you will claim $150 in free credits. That's promo code FANRUN in all caps for a limited time and only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Tennessee only, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
It's time for The Drive's Top 5 at 5.
All right, here we go. Quitting time on your Friday, 5 o'clock here on Fan Run Radio. Congratulations, you have made it. Another weekend is here. Top 5 at 5, brought to you this afternoon by Citizens National Bank, the official bank of The Drive. Here's Jake Miller.
Number 1, former Vols Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer had their dreams come true last night in the NBA draft. Keon Johnson is headed to L.A. to play for the Clippers, and Jaden Springer is headed to Philly with VFL Tobias Harris.
Pretty exciting times for Tennessee basketball as you see two players drafted in the first round, the first time since Ernie and Bernie went together in the late 70s, and the second time in 3 years that Tennessee has had multiple players drafted in the NBA draft. Tennessee basketball very healthy. The only thing that's missing is a deep run in the NCAA tournament, and we will see if this is the year that Tennessee is finally able to put that kind of run together.
Number 2, the U.S. men's national team defeated Qatar by a score of 1-0 last night to advance to the CONCACAF Gold Cup against Mexico.
Take that, Qatar! What is Qatar doing playing in the Gold Cup?
I did not understand that at all. But we'll take a win.
The fact that we needed a late goal to beat them, probably not a good sign for us going forward. But I'd be too negative. Anything could happen Sunday. Go USA.
Number 3, the Los Angeles Dodgers are finalizing a deal that will land them with Washington Nationals stars Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. This could help them take the top spot in the NL West from San Francisco and potentially make a run at the World Series.
Moving day in Major League Baseball. The rich get richer, and everybody's fortifying themselves. You're our baseball guy here, Jake, or our biggest baseball guy in terms of following Major League Baseball. What, if you had to handicap things, who do you see playing in the World Series this year?
Probably the Dodgers, and we'll go Red Sox.
Dodgers, Sox?
Yep.
All right. We'll see what happens here in the next couple months.
That's going out on a whim. That's not. Don't hold me to
that. Oh, we're holding you to that. You said it. It's out there. Now we'll circle back here in a couple of months. Jake Stradamus over here.
Number 4, Tennessee pitcher Elijah Pezens has entered the transfer portal. The junior was a weekend starter for the first 2 weeks of the season, but fell out of the rotation after giving up 5 runs in 2 innings against Indiana State. A Clarksville native, couldn't earn consistent innings out of the bullpen, falling behind Mark McLaughlin and Kirby Connell.
I mean, that's just the nature of the beast nowadays in major college athletics. Wish him well. I hope he finds a spot where he can get plenty of playing time.
Oh, yeah, and those guys are probably going to continue to be ahead of him in the pecking order heading into next year, and we're adding several really good arms, so that might just be a case of seeing the writing on the wall and wanting to move on to somewhere where you're guaranteed more playing time.
Yeah, go to Austin Peay, go to MTSU, school like that.
Sure.
And number 5, a development in the Fan Run Studios, Russell Smith will be trying pizza rolls, Totino's pizza rolls, for the first time in his life tonight.
Really? That's your number 5? Slow news day, evidently, ladies and gentlemen.
It is news. Like, I can't think of 5 people other than you that have never had pizza rolls.
Well, I was at the store last night getting some other things, and I'm walking through the frozen. I'm going to pick up a frozen pizza. And then it hit me as I'm looking and choosing a frozen pizza that I could get the pizza rolls. And so I text Jake. I was like, what should I get? And of course, he didn't text me back for like an hour. So I just guessed. And luckily, I guessed what you said I need to get, which is just plain pepperoni pizza rolls.
Not the triple pepperoni.
Not triple pepperoni. That's too much.
Well, your first mistake was you called Jake. We have the foremost expert in all things pizza rolls is already on a show and is a member of Fan Run, Cameron Black.
He's pizza roll guy?
Yeah, like to the point where I think at one point he was negotiating maybe a pizza roll sponsoring him.
Really?
That would be a nice pickup.
I will send you all a picture. I mean, nobody loves pizza rolls more than Cameron. I mean, I'm not kidding at all. The kid's weird about him. I think it's all he eats.
It's these young guys, man. They don't have the well-developed culinary palate that older folks like you and I have
Bear, developed. Do you like pizza rolls?
I mean, I did when I was 12 years old. I mean, I'm not going to act like I'm some kind of snob about it. I mean, but if I'm going to get a, as Russell likes to call, an oven pizza, I'm probably going with King Tony's. $2.50
You can't beat those.
I got a Red Baron.
You got a Red Baron?
Yeah.
I'm not big on the Red Barons.
They did something. They're not as good as they used to be. I think they changed the sauce.
Mm. Yeah, they did.
Is that it? Going to end on pizza rolls?
Yeah, pizza rolls.
All right, there you have it, the top five at five. Brought to you by Citizens National Bank, the official bank of The Drive. We have your Financial Freedom Friday post up on our Twitter feed, at Fox Sports Knox. And it was a post today about what to do if you suspect that you have been the victim of a data breach. We've got some very helpful tips out there. It's happened to a lot of folks, unfortunately, but they know what to do over at Citizens National Bank. So check that out. You can find out more and read more blog posts for free at cnbtn.com. Call 865-453-9031 for a branch near you. Citizens National Bank, the official bank of The Drive. Russell Smith, Bear, Jake Miller, cruising along with you here on a Friday afternoon edition of the show. Open lines right now. If you want to jump in, take a shot. 865-546-8200 is your number to get on the show. We do have Sam Kahn coming up from The Athletic at 520. So you got about 10 minutes. If you want to jump in now, go ahead and make your call. Make your presence felt as we roll through things this afternoon on the show. And
Sam Kahn's a strong name.
Yeah.
I've thought that all day. Every time you mention it to me since this morning, I expect him to bring just the hammer. Hard-hitting information.
He's the guy to talk to if you want to know what's going on the Texas side of all this, which we haven't really heard yet. Scrolling back through the Fan Run Twitter account, trying to find the final results from yesterday's poll question. Some people were mad.
What do you mean you're talking about Josh Heupel? He ain't coached a game yet. You can't make any judgments on that.
It's like, yeah, I know. We're just talking here. We're just talking here. Here it is. What are your thoughts on Josh Heupel as head coach of the Vols so far? Had 345 votes cast at Fox Sports Knox on Twitter. 55.7% of the audience said he's grown on me. 34.2% said meh. 8.4% said excellent. And then 1.7% said terrible. So pretty conservative takes on Coach Heupel so far. Do you think he needs to do anything to generate some excitement, some enthusiasm here before the season kicks off in a month or so, or do you think that will sort of naturally take
hold? Nah. Get the team ready, come out and hang 50 or 60 on Bowling Green. That's what he needs to do. He needs to make sure we come out and look crisp execute a game plan on both sides of the ball and give us we don't want them hanging around in the second half. Put them away early, stomp their ass, and give us something like a 52-17 kind of game. Score every time we have the ball almost. That's the best thing Josh Heupel could do for this fan base. I mean, did you not get totally sick of how we'd let, you know, the going all hell all the way back to Dooley? Teams that just hang around with us, teams we should just normally at any other era of Tennessee football, we would absolutely just smash into oblivion in the first half.
When was the last good curb stomping of an opponent that Tennessee delivered? That wasn't an FCS opponent.
Would it be Cal with that bunch?
Surely there. No.
Were we just absolutely.
You're talking about 2005?
Cincinnati, 2011.
Butch Jones, we curb stomped him pretty good.
Yeah.
Surely there's been. Surely Butch.
Really count that.
Butch put some beat downs on people, didn't he?
The Northwestern game and the bowl.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was the curb stomping.
Butch would. Absolutely take some middling Big Ten team behind the woodshed in a meaningless bowl game. I mean, he was the master at that.
That was a sweet spot.
Nebraska.
Iowa.
Nebraska game wasn't a full-fledged beatdown, but it was a decisive win. But, yeah, we strapped.
No, but you know what? That was one out of all this whole era. That was one of the funnest games. That I watched. We were down at Casual Pint, down way out there in Farragut, and that was the night that Chance spilt beer on the cub when he was like 6 years old, and you taught him MF-er accidentally and some other choice words, and we were blowing it the first half, and that was a really fun game.
Derek Barnett broke the all-time sack record that end of that game.
Yep. That was a really good team. That was a team that probably should have been. They definitely should have been in New Orleans, and I'll still contend that the 15 team had playoff talent, and Butch just kind of mishandled them. We damn near beat Alabama down to Titletown at one damn pass. Here's a question for you. If we had beaten Alabama that day, is Butch still our coach?
When was that, the 2015?
Yes.
It's a good question.
We had them on the ropes.
It's a good question because, I mean, you're very likely to go on and win the East that year. And who won the – did Bama win or was that an LSU year or something like that?
If I'm not mistaken, Bama won that year. I mean, yeah, you probably may have won the Natty that year.
You probably would have had to play them again, so that probably not going to work out well for you.
We were – that team was talented enough where we could just about go toe-to-toe with them.
Well, I mean,
that defense was pretty damn good that year.
It's college football butterfly effect. I mean, it's a great what if to ponder because if you do that and people say, well, you still would have blown it the next year, and then by 2017 we would have forgotten.
No, not necessarily.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you beat them in 2015 and go to the SEC championship game, that changes a lot of things, man. Maybe Butch Jones doesn't fold like a cheap tent when the players come to him and demand that they fire, that they change strength coaches. Maybe they keep Dave Lawson in there. Maybe the program continues to develop. Maybe they don't blow it in 2016. Maybe they win the East back-to-back. And at that point, yeah, I think that
– Yeah, Butch would still be here.
You probably – even if he was dumb enough to still hire Larry Scott as his offensive coordinator in 2017, he probably would have built up enough equity at that point to get a do-over, to fire Scott and maybe go try again. I think he would have been gone by now because I think he would have ultimately showed himself to be the fraud that he is, but he would have been gone in 2017, so it would have all been different. Maybe John Curry's still here. Maybe he hires a different coach. Maybe things turn out differently. Who knows?
Yeah. It's just in there. That's the one game that I always come back to and kind of wonder about. Like, what if he doesn't catch that ball? So.
What if who doesn't catch that ball?
That kid from Alabama that jumped like 8 feet in the air. And
oh, yeah. It was a fourth down.
Yeah, he fingernails grabbed the Yeah. It was just magically grabbed it.
You knew they were going to make that play too, right? I mean, you just knew it was the ball. It's like, oh, of course they're going to catch this.
Yeah, I kind of had a sick feeling about it.
I never thought we were going to win that game.
I did at one point because we were just, you know, they had played like eight straight or something insane. They were beat up and they were tired. And we came out. That was one of the games we came out kind of fired up and ready to fight them. Because, man, we never beat Alabama. The teams that Tennessee's had, was it 15 in 50 years? The 15 are probably some of the toughest teams Tennessee's ever fielded. So you're going to beat them. You got to show up. It's a different mentality. And that's a street fight when you play those guys. And unfortunately, we just haven't been tough enough since then.
No, and that's the thing is they fans didn't believe we could win. Players didn't believe. Alabama believed, and they made the play when it had to be made. So anyway, enough of that that uplifting trip down memory lane. We do have some breaking news today. Ralph Russo of the Associated Press reporting that the NCAA Board of Governors today called for a constitutional convention in November, the first step toward launching dramatic reform in the governance of college sports. So this could be the crumbling of the NCAA, and what emerges from this process will be interesting. Stung for years by criticism that it is too heavy-handed and out of touch, the NCAA said it wants to, quote, reimagine how to more effectively manage the needs of its more than 45,000 athletes at more than 1,100 schools. As the national landscape changes, college sports must also quickly adapt to become more responsible to the needs of college athletes and current member schools, Jack DeGiorgia says, chair of the Board of Governors and president of Georgetown. This effort will position the NCAA to continue providing meaningful opportunities for current college athletes and those for generations to come. So here's my thing. To me, this just seems like more egghead NCAA nonsense. You got the president of Georgetown offering this. We need a constitutional convention so that we can get the 1,100 schools on the same page. And I just wonder if we're at a point where it's too little too late. And a guy like Greg Sankey and maybe some of these other, you know, more business-oriented people that have been leading college football the world are going to say, you know what? You guys go have your constitutional convention. And if you want to figure out a way to hold on to your basketball tournament or whatever, I guess we can have those conversations. But we're doing something else without you, and we're going to convince – we're going to break away. And, you know, what we were talking about
– Oh, football is, but make no mistake, NCAA's not letting go of basketball. That's $1 billion a year, bro.
Well, what – I mean, I'm sure the NCAA doesn't want to let go of it, but why do the schools – why do the Kansases, the Tennessees, the Kentuckys – Texas's, the Floridas of the world. Why do they need the NCAA?
Because the NCAA, it's set up perfectly, and everybody's making dump truck loads full of cash off of it.
It's set up perfectly until it's not. And, yeah, everybody's making good money off it, but if there's a way to make more without the NCAA sticking – did you hear how angry Sankey was about the whole female weight room thing? Like, he brought that up last week, and everybody had forgotten about that, and he was visibly upset about all that,
about the inequity of the facilities for the
– Yeah, he doesn't –
between the men's and women's.
He doesn't want to deal with these people anymore.
Well, I mean, that was just, you know, one of my favorite sayings. I mean, the NCAA just – they pulled out a .357 Magnum and blew their damn foot off on it. I mean, how, with all the money they've got for that, you made a good point, Russ. All the money they've got for those basketball tournaments, that just seems like it would be a drop in the bucket of money to make sure that the ladies had equal facilities.
I mean,
it's an unforced error.
I just wonder if they're going to say, listen, I don't care what happens at Georgetown anymore. It is not relevant in Alabama and Tennessee's world. And you guys can, you can have your constitutional convention, but we're going to take, we're getting a group together of the, you know, 30 to 40 teams that can actually make money, lots of money in the world of college athletics, and we're going to go do our own thing. And the NCAA is not going to be a part of it. We're going to have our own governance body, so, but it's not going to include whatever's happening up there in Indianapolis. You guys
so,
have had
so
your
what
chance.
Are they going to do? Just do the lower, like the FCS schools and below?
Yeah, I guess so. It's not.
It's going to be a hell of a fight, man, over that basketball deal.
What can
I mean, get out? I don't know what they can do, but I'm looking for. I'm hoping it's a big fight. I like watching fights. It's fun.
We got to take
a
quick.
It's going to be a hell of a fight.
Yeah, we'll talk more about this with Sam Kahn.
Okay.
Coming up next, Fan Run Radio. We're going to take a quick timeout right here. We'll be back with more right after this.
The Drive.
Fan Run Radio, The Drive continues. Russ LeBaire cruising along with you. Friday afternoon edition of The Drive. Sam Kahn Jr. covers all things Texas for The Athletic. He joins us now on the G3 Help Me Hotline. Good afternoon, Sam. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Hey, doing very well. So you're right in the eye of the hurricane here the past couple of days, week or so, man. You must be, your head must be spinning right about now.
I'll tell you, I'm pretty tired, and I will give my gratitude to Texas and Oklahoma and the SEC for making this a swift process. I've covered conference realignment before, but never seemed to have anything wrapped up so efficiently as this did in 9 days. So I appreciate them doing that because the last 9 days have been pretty hectic.
Well, and doesn't that just speak to the diligence that was obviously done before the story broke a week ago? We in the public and the media, most of the media, has only been dealing with this for 7 or 8 days. Obviously, Oklahoma and Texas and the powers that be in the SEC have been carefully plotting out these moves for well over half a year at this point. It's pretty remarkable that they were able to keep all that movement quiet.
Yeah, I'm impressed with the amount of restraint, because something this momentous that has this type of impact on the sport, I mean, it's juicy stuff. I mean, it's something that you would want to talk about and people would want to talk about. So for the power and leadership at Oklahoma and Texas to be able to keep it a tight lid on it to this point up until last Wednesday, I'm pretty impressed them being able to do it. Could you imagine if we had woken up on Monday morning and saw Oklahoma and Texas drop a letter to the Big 12 saying they're getting out of their grant rights in 2025 out of the blue without any advance notice? I think it would have been pretty wild to imagine.
Yeah, so what's the reaction been like down there in Texas, particularly from Texas fans? Or is there excitement at going to the SEC, or is there a little bit of nostalgia and maybe even sadness to be leaving the Big 12 behind?
No, I think most of the Texas fan base is pretty excited because they feel like this is something that could invigorate their program and help them in a big way. Obviously, they understand that this conference is difficult and it's not going to be easy, and Texas had its own issues. They haven't really had a lot of success in the Big 12 in the last decade. But I think they feel like this is a move that helps them stay with the top programs in the sport, you know, the Alabamas, the Georgias, teams like that. And I think Texas fans have seen up close, and they don't like to admit it, but they pay attention to what goes on at Texas A&M and vice versa. They've seen the impact it's had on A&M on its recruiting. A&M has raise its recruiting profile, where it's recruiting at the level and sometimes higher than Texas. And it's A&M's had definitely had a lot of success in the last 10 years. They've, you know, had two top five finishes. They almost made the college football playoff last year. So I think Texas has seen what that impact has been on them and decided that, hey, you know what, maybe the SEC can do that for us as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that the move has paid off for A&M. I mean, they were for so long looked at as little brother, and they've carved out their own niche. It's obvious to see why they would have been against Texas coming to the league. Now that it's a foregone conclusion, it's going to happen. Do you think that the progress A&M has made, is that in any way diminished, or do you think that it's Texas that'll have to be doing the catching up right now?
I definitely think it's the latter. I don't think A&M's success will be diminished. Now, I do think it makes it a little bit more challenging to recruit, because one of A&M's primary recruiting pitches to prospects in Texas was, hey, you want to play in the SEC and you can do it and you stay home. You can stay here in Texas and do it and play in the conference that produces the most NFL draft picks every year. Well, now Texas and OU give Texas prospects an option. Obviously, Texas gives you another option in-state, and OU is a program that's just north of the border and recruits the state very well and has a lot of Texas kids on it. So that will definitely impact the recruiting edge. But I think Texas still does have a lot of work to do, because they're on their third coach since they pushed Mack Brown out in 2013. And I think they're still very much searching for an identity. I think they probably need some game-changing talent. They need to be able to develop it a little bit better. One thing that certainly helped A&M's transition to the SEC was the presence of one Johnny Manziel, and the fact that they had a coach in Kevin Sumlin who brought an up-tempo, hurry-up offense to the league at a time when it really wasn't. And then the league has changed a lot since then, and I don't know that Texas has that type of player on its roster to change its fortunes. They do have a guy who I think has a lot of a potential in running back Bijan Robinson, who I think could be a dark horse Heisman candidate. But they still do, in my opinion, have some work to do on a player development front and just being more consistent year in and year out. I mean, in the Big 12, they had trouble beating TCU, a team they've only beat twice in the last 9 years.
Talking with Sam Kahn, Jr. of The Athletic this afternoon on the show. And obviously, Sam, this Texas A&M Longhorn rivalry is it's bitter, it's longstanding, it's marked by a lot of distrust on both sides of that thing. I reading a piece you had today, The Athletic, where the Texas folks said, quote, "We'd like to thank the Aggies for voting for us this week." Is that a little bit of an olive branch being offered by the Longhorns, or is this just something that they felt like they had to say to keep up appearances?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think they understand that this means the rivalry's coming back. And for the last 10 years, that has been a buzzworthy topic. Anytime there's been a new coach or administrator, president, athletic director, the question always asks, are you bringing back the Texas Texas A&M rivalry? Because it was played for 118 years and it was played for every year since 1915 consecutively. So it was a messy divorce. I mean, there was a lot of hurt feelings involved in that. And now it's coming back, and I think it's imperative on both programs to understand that the return of this is good for college football fans in Texas. A lot of people here in Texas grew up either on Thanksgiving night or Black Friday watching Texas, Texas A&M play. And it was I did it myself. I mean, I grew up here in Texas, and that was something that I used to do with my family every day. My dad and I used to watch that game, and it was a lot of fun. And I'm excited that it's coming back. But they certainly are appreciative of the support, because A&M obviously was vocally opposed to this move a week ago, but they've come around, and I don't think their fans are coming around quite that quick, but the university leadership, their president and AD, understand that bringing Texas and OU into the SEC is going to raise everybody's value, and it'll help the conference at large, and that's why I think they've come around on it.
So you mentioned that rivalry coming back. Obviously, we don't know how the scheduling aspect of all of this is going to play out. We don't even know if they're done yet. There's been some rumblings that it could expand beyond these 16 teams. But assuming for just a minute that we roll with 16 teams and that Texas and OU are able to extricate themselves from the Big 12 or whatever's left of it quickly and perhaps begin playing the SEC as quickly as next year, do you think that there is an expectation amongst both the Texas and the A&M side of things that rivalry, that game, will resume on an annual basis? And if so, do you think there will be a move to put it back in Thanksgiving? Like you said, I mean, even folks up here, and I know speaking for myself, I enjoyed that being a part of Thanksgiving weekend, seeing that game on an annual basis.
I think the SEC would certainly like it to be, because, I mean, I think you could you imagine a Thursday night Egg Bowl, a Black Friday Texas Tech A&M, and a Saturday night Iron Bowl? I mean, I think that's an appealing Thanksgiving weekend schedule if you look at it. So I think the SEC certainly would like to. I think Texas is definitely open to it. I would be interested to know how A&M feels about doing it every year now that they're in the conference. But I think ultimately they will decide that, you know what, this is probably the best thing. And I think A&M's best approach is probably, hey, guess what? Bring it on. You know, we left to get away from Texas, and now Texas is coming back to us. So they should embrace it, because they've had 10 years to build up their program in the SEC, and they're a lot different program than they were 10 years ago. But I would hope that it's an annual basis, personally. If it's only every couple of years, I think I'd be a little bit disappointed. And I guess part of that is going to stem from whether they're in the same pod or how the scheduling setup goes. Are they going to give every team a few permanent opponents? And if they do, I would hope that Texas Tech A&M factor into that on an annual basis.
When we talk to a lot of Big 12 people here the past week or so, and it seems like there's a lot of be careful what you wish for talk, advice to the SEC as far as, look, Texas has been, they were a major reason that the old Southwest Conference folded, and they're a major reason that there have been so much acrimony in the Big 12 the past couple of years. Texas A&M wanted to get away from them, and they exert so much power and influence over that league. What do you think Texas's influence will be in the SEC? Do you think they will initially play nice? Do you think they'll play nice for the duration of it, assuming this is a forever type thing? Or do you think that the SEC, some of the other powers that are already here, the Alabamas, the Georgias, the Floridas, the Tennessees of the world, won't stand to be, you know, walked on the way maybe some Big 12 or Southwest Conference schools were in the past?
Yeah, I think some of that's going to depend on the leadership, on Greg Sankey and the SEC office. I think the SEC prides itself on collegiality, on unity, on working together, and not having this kind of acrimony or airing out dirty laundry, so to speak. So I think at least in the early going, I think Texas will conduct itself that way. I think they'll do what they're supposed to, and I think they will fall in line. And I think, again, because they are not they're a premier brand, but they are not a program that's been greatly successful on the football field. So I don't think that they're going to come in and start trying to call shots necessarily. Now, over time, you know, how does that change if they start having success? I don't know. We'll have to see. Yeah, certainly history would advise us to proceed with caution for the reasons you mentioned. But I think in the early going, I think they'll play nice and do as they probably should.
I just see now, looking at your Twitter timeline, as of 50 minutes ago, I guess it's really official now that Matthew McConaughey has tweeted on this.
And nothing is complete until the Minister of Culture has weighed in at Texas Athletics. So definitely that has gone on. And then I've seen all the ADs around and presidents around the SEC have passed along some messages. I saw Texas A&M AD Ross Bjork gave a howdy, which is A&M standard welcome to Oklahoma and Texas. So it seems like everybody is weighing in 2 cents today.
All right, everybody's holding hands and singing Kumbaya. We'll see what happens here about 6 weeks when the games start, but for now, everything is good. All right, the other big piece of news out there today, Sam, the NCAA Board of Governors is calling a constitutional convention to basically launch a complete reform of the way college sports are governed. What does this mean for college football, and what does it mean for college sports in general in America?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a different government long term, at least when it comes to football. And I think that's part of the reason why this move with Texas and OU to the SEC has been made so many aftershocks, is because I think people understood that this was not just two schools. Probably going to lead some grander change down the road. And I know even before this change happened, Mark Emmert had made the statement that the NCAA probably does need to have a revision or needs to step back a little bit. And I think when you talk to leaders throughout the sport, I think they echo that sentiment that it's time for some drastic change in the governance structure. So this is the first step in that. Now, what does it look like long term? It's hard to say. I think it's difficult to decipher how this will play out. But there's no doubt, I think, because of how many things are changing, whether it's NIL, whether it's conference realignment, whether it's a transfer portal, what have you, so much monumental change in the sport and the power conferences, I think, would like to have things done a certain way, that moving in this direction is probably the right decision.
It seems like the SEC, even before Texas and Oklahoma were added, but especially now that they have been, is in a unique position to lead on this thing and exert a lot of influence over whatever the outcome is going to be of this situation. Do you think that Greg Sankey, you know, he's talked about these issues before. What do you think his influence will be on this? I think we might have lost Sam. Sam, you with us? he was cutting in and out there a little bit. All right.
More blue blood programs, and I think being able to have that power with a 16-team super conference, I think it opens the door for you to lead the way in any kind of seismic change in the sport, because it's, you're going to have the largest conference. You're the conference that's going to affect the most institutions of when some kind of change is made. So I think Sankey's in a really good position in that regard, and I think that's part of the reason why you make this kind of move is to facilitate and to lead the way on some type of change.
Hey, Sam, really appreciate your time. Great information. Thanks for jumping on. He's with The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter at S-Khan, K-H-A-N-J-R, Sam Khan Jr. of The Athletic. Thanks so much, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Sam Khan Jr. making his presence felt this afternoon there on The Drive. And broke up a little bit there, that last answer, but obviously I think we all know that the SEC – is going to have a lot to say about how the NCAA reforms itself when that process gets underway here towards the end of the year. Pretty interesting stuff. I want to work in a phone call here before we get to break. Nick has been hanging on patiently for quite a while. Nick, you're on The Drive. Good afternoon, sir.
Hello, gentlemen. This is a frequent listener, sometimes caller, Nick. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well. Thanks for calling in.
Incredible.
Hey, I called in last Friday, and I prefaced my call with saying how many beers I'd had. I think I was second place to Phil that Friday. I think I'm firmly in first place right now. But the crux of my call last weekend was taking a shot at Jake Miller about screwing up the podcast. And after having listened to it 11 or 12 times since then, I understand that I was in the wrong.
Something you want to say to Jake? You want to offer a little bit of an apology, Nick?
Well, I'm leaving that up to Bear. As I said last week, I know Bear doesn't like being talked nice to, so I told him to go to hell.
Oh,
and,
appreciated it.
I know Bear's got a firm stance on apologies, so whether or not I apologize to Jake Miller is going to be up to Bear right now. So, Bear, tell me what I need to do.
Jake Miller's a punk and a clown. And
no, just say you're sorry.
Hey,
man, what's wrong with
Miller,
that?
Miller, you can go to hell, too. You guys have a great weekend.
Sorry.
Go Vols.
I'm sorry.
Nick quickly climbing the power rankings of some of our best scholars.
Sorry you had to
He's
sit through
that.
He's
up there with ZR.
Sorry, we just had a hard-hitting piece with Sam Khan. I think it was a nice little bit of radio right there. It was informative. It's fast-paced.
Oh,
it was engaging. And then we followed up with that. Nick waited on hold like half an hour just to
tell me to go to hell.
Just to ask Bear whether or not he should apologize, and then – a completely unwarranted attack on Jake Miller.
It's not the worst thing anybody's ever said to me.
It's an outrage.
That was great radio. Sam Khan, that was incredible.
That was a great little interview.
A lot of good information.
What did you learn?
That he's much like us when it comes to that whole deal with, you know, Egg Bowl on Thursday,
A&M, cool.
Texas on Friday, Iron Bowl on Saturday.
Can't believe he left out Tennessee Vandy.
That's not.
Does it move the needle on a national scale?
No. And if you, with all these teams we have and the rivalries, you could set it up on two consecutive weekends. Like the weekend before, with them moved all the way to the end of our schedule, you know, you could have something on Thursday, something on Friday, and then, you know, Tennessee, Georgia on Saturday.
I'll tell you something to watch for. As
what's that?
The tradition aspect of college football continues to erode, they're going to start playing these games on different days, just like the NFL.
Oh, yeah, they're going to get standalone. They want to get the most bang for their buck when it comes to TV advertiser dollars.
We're going
to
be playing on Sundays and Fridays, maybe Mondays. Monday night SEC football.
Be like Maction Tuesday nights.
And you know
that
what?
LSU Tennessee Hurricane game was fun that Monday night.
But you know what?
That was a good one.
My initial reaction is, man, that sucks. College football should be played on Saturday. But you know what? We'll watch it because it's SEC football on television. And part of me might think it's kind of cool to have an SEC game to watch on a weeknight. We'll all watch that. Everybody will. We used to make fun of the Mac for playing on Thursday nights. Man, can you imagine if we anybody
like one or two Thursday night games a year?
Ole Miss weekly. It's your turn to play the Thursday night game, Tennessee. You're playing Ole Miss. Everybody would watch that.
We used to do that.
Play them at the Liberty Bowl in Memphis.
Remember that back in the late 90s, early 2000s? There was always a Thursday night SEC game. Tennessee played a bunch of them. We kind of made our name in the early 90s.
The
Louisville game with what's his...
We played a handful of them, yeah. 91, we opened the season on a Thursday night in Louisville, and then I think that was Peyton's junior year, maybe 96 against Ole Miss. We played them in Memphis on a Thursday night.
We played Tuberville. Was that the Tuberville game?
That would have been Tuberville, I think.
Down Liberty Bowl. Yeah, it was. It was Tuberville.
Where was it? We played Colorado.
In Anaheim. The Rams.
That was
stadium.
In Anaheim. Yeah. That was the game. Looking back on it, if we'd won that game, we might have. That may have changed the trajectory that year because Colorado ended up sharing.
We tied
the national championship.
Didn't we tie with Auburn as well that year?
Yeah, we went 9-2-2 that year. Won the Sugar Bowl. But that Colorado game, you know, it's interesting looking back on it. They were, I believe, no, they won the national championship that year. They shared the national championship with Georgia Tech in 1990. We opened up the season. They were a powerhouse at that time under Bill McCartney, and. That was not a game many Tennessee fans expected to win. And we had won the conference championship the year before in a three-way tie with Auburn and Alabama in 1989, going out there to open up against Colorado. Was it Darian Hagan, the quarterback back then?
Was Bieniemy the running back?
Bieniemy was on that team, I believe. I mean,
that team was loaded.
Yeah, they were loaded. And Tennessee went toe-to-toe with them. And I can't remember if it was Cobb or Webb who broke off, I guess it would have been Webb, right, because Cobb was kicked off in 89. Chuck Webb breaks off a long run on the last play of the game. It was a tied game. So if he had been able to get out of bounds, like he ended up getting tackled, I think, around the 15-yard line or something, and the clock expired. But
it was between the 20 and the 15.
If he had been able to get out of bounds, we could have kicked a field goal and won that game.
Yeah. And that was kind of a little bit of a coming out party. That's when Tennessee kind of started making a national name for themselves. That was a really important game.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden people took us serious on the national level, and that kind of paved the way for what happened in the 90s.
Would Greg Burke have made that kick?
I don't know. Was it Burke or was it Bexford?
But it was Burke in 1990.
It would have been Burke.
Remember, okay. He took the Gatorade bottle off the helmet ahead. Against Auburn a couple weeks later.
I think he would have. Who knows?
He missed the kick, or I guess the kick was blocked against Alabama. Still probably the most painful loss that I've ever felt as a Tennessee fan, losing to Alabama in 1990.
That was horrendous over even like, over there in the Cumberland Avenue, Fort Sanders.
Most gut-wrenching game.
There were some pretty good fights between Alabama and UT fans up in the fort. It got ugly up there. It got really ugly.
I think I cried that day. I remember the way the sky looked after that game. It was just dreary and overcast.
It was a beautiful fall day.
It was. I remember like towards nighttime, it was just ugh.
See, I always forget that you were a little kid, and those were like...
I was 10.
Just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking losses. Mine, you know, I'm forgetting.
Still haven't gotten over it. Probably never will.
Hey, a lot of UT fans have never gotten over it. One of the most painful
Bama
moments.
Bama lost to Southern Miss, Brett Favre, that year. They were terrible. I mean, it was set up on a platter. We were so much better than them. Should have just stomped them. And it was screwing around with them for four quarters. Yep. It's 6-6. Majors went conservative. God rest his soul. I love him, but he did. He went conservative, and we should have blown those guys out. And we end up getting.
I'm just talking about Brett Favre, man. I mean, 30 years later.
It was
you
a
know,
trash we, Bama team, dude. It was a trash Bama team.
Oh, yeah. We should have blown them out that day. We came out tight.
They went 7-5, bro. They were they were trash.
That's what goes on in the Alabama-Tennessee series. I don't think we've ever blown them out.
Oh,
Nobody does.
Peyton bent them over. We blew them out on the rag in the late 90s. What are you talking about?
What was the score of the 95 game?
Go back and look at the final scores.
41-14. Yeah.
Peyton Manning bent them over a barrel and showed them the 50 states.
It's not often. I didn't say ever, but if you go back and look, even the years we win, usually it's a touchdown game except for, you know, that one brief period in the 90s where Fulmer had, when they were hiring horrible coaches and we had the GOAT.
We hammered them in the 96 game was a little bit closer. We hammered them in 97 in their house again. Just wore them out. We beat them decisively in 98, decisively in 99. Did they beat us in 2000? They broke the streak at one point.
It was 2000. We beat them in 2001. It might have been 2002 because we lost to them in 02 and then beat them in 03 and 04.
Yeah, we made them lick the white dog poop a couple times in the 90s. Stay with us. The Drive continues. The shocking conclusion coming up next. Speak now, forever hold your peace. 546-8200. Back to wrap things up after this.
The Drive.
Hey, it's Bo Kregner here with the Kregner Group. If you're feeling overwhelmed by the prospect.
Wrapping up another week. Last show of the month. When we reconvene on Monday, it'll be August. It'll be opening week of Tennessee football camp. Countdown will be on to the kickoff, the Josh Heupel era here in Knoxville, and it'll be exciting stuff. So be sure to tune in Fan Run Radio all day long, all week long, all month, all year. Big stuff coming up this fall right here on Fan Run. Wrapping up the show on a Friday, we got the Overtime Boys. They decided to grace us with their presence. I guess they figure, air conditioning is on. I guess we'll come in and do a show today. It was nice of them.
Right.
Roger, and our final caller of the evening. What's up, Rog?
Oh, nothing much. That's not much. How y'all doing?
Doing well. How are you, sir?
Oh, doing fine. Doing fine. I just wanted to ask you about the – I just wanted to ask you and Bear about the Oklahoma thing, Oklahoma – coming to want to ask y'all. I like it, but I don't like it. I mean, I like it in a way, but I don't like it. I just want to ask you if we can talk about it. Y'all like the idea of Oklahoma and them coming to the SEC? You know, it'd be different because it's hard to be harder than that, but harder. But so that's why I ask y'all. Y'all like it? Coming.
Yeah, I got mixed feelings on it, Roger. Yeah. It's exciting to bring in those two big teams to the league. It's going to be provide a lot of compelling matchups, but it makes it harder for Tennessee to get back because that's at least one more hard game that you figure is going to be on the schedule every single year. Two more teams that you got to recruit against in the conference. But it's done, and you just gotta figure out a way to fix Tennessee first. You got to concentrate on your own self and not worry about what everybody else is doing and figure out a way to make better decisions here in Tennessee when it comes to hiring and firing coaches.
Bear, how about you, Bear? You like it? Matthias?
I do, Raj. I think that there's going to be still a lot more changes and adjustments and things that we never dreamed would ever happen in college football to before they're done with it. At some point, especially if they go to a super conference, Raj, they're going to have to address parity.
Yeah.
So, and does that mean we're going to go to a draft or just some kind of equitable distribution of the talent? It's got to be fair. Yeah. It can't just be Alabama.
Right. Yeah. I hear you. And, And Russell's want to ask you. I don't know. But do you know if they're going how they're going to put Oklahoma and Texas, like they're going to do one side, both them on one side, or that kind of how they're going to put Texas and Oklahoma into the league yet? Like for how they're going to do.
Raj, they haven't said yet, my friend. Okay. That is the million dollar question. How is this all going to look when it all shakes out? What do you want? Do you want to have Alabama and Auburn in the East?
I'm not really sure. That's a good question. I'm not sure. It's hard to really say because I'm still kind of surprised it's happening. So I'm just kind of trying to get my mind around it. You know, so I'm not really sure how to really like to have it done. You know, how would you do if you were them?
Going to be 16 teams, I'd probably just go with two 8-team divisions, move Auburn and Alabama over to the East, Missouri to the West, and let it ride. But they don't ask me, Raj. Yeah. They don't ask me. No. Can you believe that? They got this intellect sitting here in Knoxville, and nobody consults me?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's an outrage. Yeah. Thanks, Raj. Have a good weekend, man.
You say bye.
Thank you. Another day, another dollar, another stellar edition of The Drive in the books. Thank you, Jake Miller. Thank you, Bear.
Thank you, Russ.
Overtime coming up next. We'll do it again Monday right here on Fan Run Radio.